Who are the real people we consider our sages? Who were they in life? What is the legacy they left us? Join Rabbi Danny Sackstein for the next hour as he explores the lives of our Torah giants, the spiritual geniuses who shaped the way we approach Judaism today. That's Focus on Our Sages right now on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soul. Great to be with you this Wednesday afternoon as usual. And looks like we'll hopefully get some rain this Wednesday afternoon. Desperately need the rain. It's been so hot and so dry. So please God, we'll see some healthy rains today and tonight. Today is the 27th of November. The Hebrew day today is the 26th of Mar Cheshvan of the year 5785. And today's the 26th of Cheshvan. Tonight is the 27th of Cheshvan. So tonight it matches the English date. It is the anniversary of the end of the flood in the year 2104 before the Common Era, which is, according to the Hebrew date, 1657 from creation. The flood waters finally subsided, and Noach and his family and the animals that were with him in the Tabor in the Ark, from tonight, the date of the 27th of Cheshvan, God commanded them to leave the Ark and to now re-enter the world after the flood and repopulate the world and resettle the world. So it's more than 3,000 years ago. Tonight is the anniversary of the end of the flood, Noach and his family emerging from the ark. Tomorrow night and Friday, which is the 28th of Cheshvan, is also a significant date because the 28th of Cheshvan is the anniversary in 1949 of the Jewish people of Israel reaching the number of 1 million. We reached the number of 1 million, the population of State of Israel in 1949 on the date, the 28th of Cheshvan. So it's worthwhile mentioning that. Over the years, Baruch Hashem, the population of Israel has grown tremendously, together with the aliyahs from Russia, from Ethiopia, of the high birth rates. And the Jewish population today, Baruch Hashem in Israel, is about 8 million. The Israeli population has just passed 10 million, with about 80% of that being Jewish, a little bit about 20% being Muslim, being Christian, and being Druze. And Baruch Hashem, the majority now of the world's Jewish population is in the land of Israel. So please God, the growth and the strengthening and the development of the Jewish people in the land of Israel should continue. So that brings us to the next point I wanted to share with you. And that was, so we said today is the 26th of Cheshvan, but 2 days ago, which was Monday, was the date of the 24th of Cheshvan. And the 24th of Cheshvan was also a very significant date because it is the Yahrzeit of the great Baron Edmund de Rothschild. Baron Edmund de Rothschild was born in 1845, and he was one of the members of the great Rothschild family. The original patriarch, Charles, was Anshul Meir Rothschild, and Anshul Meir had 5 sons, and he sent each one to a capital in Europe. He started international banking, because until that point, you couldn't do banking between countries, even if you, and they built a tremendous financial empire by opening the possibility of international banking to Europe. If you banked in one country in Europe, in England, let's say, you couldn't bank in France. But the Rothschilds, very brilliantly, they had family members in the different centers in Europe, and therefore they trusted their brother in another center, and through their network, we were now suddenly able to do successful banking from one country to another. The brothers went to Naples, to Frankfurt, and Paris and London. Those were five cities in which the Rothschilds were placed. The one brother, Nathan, who was an observant Jew, was in London. There was no banking done on Shabbos. The other brother was in Frankfurt. His name was William, also was a observant Jew, and he was a big supporter of Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. And James was the brother in France. James was not an observant Jew. He was an assimilated Jew, but he insisted that his children would not intermarry and or would not convert to Christianity, which was common with the aristocracy of the son, the Jewish aristocracy. And so he was, although he wasn't observant, he was very clear and very strong on his children marrying Jews and remaining Jews. And the Edmund was the son of James. So he was the grandson of the patriarch of Meir, of Enshul Meir Rothschild. And so therefore he was a third generation, and he was also completely assimilated like his father. At the age of 29 years old, he inherited the French branch of the Rothschild Empire, which was worth hundreds of millions of dollars even in those days. And he was not particularly motivated by building the empire further and by investing the money and being involved in banking. He was more interested in finding ways to help the world and to spend the money in a philanthropic way. And that's often the case with children and grandchildren that inherit these fortunes from their family. They often look for, understandably, ways to help the world. And that's where we see a lot of these foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation. Those come from the children and grandchildren. And the Baron was looking for a cause. A Jew in Poland, he was the rabbi of Bialystok. His name was Rav Shmuel Mualeva. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he was the executive director of an organization called the Chovevei Tzion. The Chovevei Tzion was a bunch of Jews in Europe who had a strong desire to return to the ancient homeland of the Jewish people, back to Israel. And it was an organization that tried to assist financially and those who returned back to Israel. It actually started in Volozhin, the Chovevei Tzion, and the great Ntziv, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of the great Volozhin Yeshiva, was the figurehead of the Chovevei Tzion. And this great Talmud Chacham, the Rabbi of Bialystok, Rav Shmuel Mualeva, was the executive director. And he heard about the Baron, and he heard the Baron had tremendous financial resources, and that the Baron was looking to perhaps invest in worthy causes. And so he decides to go and visit the Baron. Now, this is a very unlikely match. The Rav Mualeva doesn't speak French, and the Baron doesn't speak Yiddish. And in 1882, off he goes to see the Baron, and he convinces him about this wild scheme of the Chovevei Tzion to fund new settlements for Jews in the land of Israel. And the Baron was very touched and very moved by the enthusiasm and by the tremendous opportunity that Rav Mualeva placed before him. And he said to Rav Mualeva on the spot, he said, "You bring the people and I'll pay the money. I'll fund it." And the Baron ended up building 39 new settlements, funding 39 new settlements in the land of Israel. Isn't that unbelievable? And today, from those original settlements are major towns, major cities like Rishon LeZion, Zichron Yaakov. Yaakov was after the was named after his father James Yaakov. That's why it's called Zichron Yaakov. Binyamina was named after him. His Hebrew name was Binyamin. Rehovot, it was also one of the towns that he sponsored. Machzeket Batya, which was after his mother, whose name was Batya. Givat Ada, which was after his wife Adele. And Pardes Chana, which was after his auntie, whose name was Chana. So he funded 39 different settlements which is quite an incredible thing. Many of them large cities today in the land of Israel. He also funded a wine company. He called it Carmel Mizrahi and Mizrahi of the East. He had Carmel West, Carmel Maarav, which was in France. And he actually gave the winery over to the workers. And we have Mizrahi wine from the land of Israel. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 High FM.
We're discussing the Yotzat. It's actually the 90th Yotzat. Monday was the 90th Yotzat of the Baron Edmund de Rothschild, who was responsible for building 39 new settlements in the land of Israel. And his legacy lives on with many of those settlements becoming large cities today. The Baron died in 1939 at the age of 89, and he was at first buried in France after the State of Israel. His body was reinterred in 1953, and he was buried in a place called Ramat HaNadiv, which means the heel of the benefactor. And he's in Ben-Gurion actually was present at the reinterment ceremony of his body. And David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, says the following, I'm quoting directly, I doubt that the entire history of the Jewish people in the diaspora over 2,000 years, one could find a man like Baron Edmund Rothschild, the builder of the Yeshuv, and in our renewed homeland, which is such an incredible compliment that was paid to him. He writes, the Baron writes in his own ethical will, he writes, God, I thank the God of Israel for allowing me to be a part of the returning of the people of Israel to the land of Israel. So we see that his involvement in the rebuilding of the Jewish peoples and the participation of the Jewish people's return to the land of Israel was so important to him, had such a great impact on his whole life. Rosh Moleva got him involved, and it was life-changing for him. And in fact, after he died, his son James dedicated the new Knesset building to his father. He paid for the building of the Knesset, which is in Jerusalem today, the government building in Israel, as well as the Supreme Court of Israel, as well as the National Library. So they were all tribute to his father, to Edmund Rothschild, whose 90th Yotzat was just on Monday. Okay, great. So now let's get to the second part of what I wanted to talk to, and that is a very powerful description of this week's Torah reading, this week's parasha. This week's parasha is one of the most dramatic in all of the Torah, and it's Parshas Toldos. Toldos means generations, and it deals with the incredible story of Yaakov and Esav. Yitzchak and Rivka are now the next ones who assume the mantle and lead the Jewish people after the death of Yitzchak's parents, Avram and Sarah, and Eliezer, Yitzchak's, second in command, is instructed to find a wife at the end of last week's Parsha, Chaya Sarah, for his son Yitzchak, and he finds Rivka. Through divine signs, he sees that she is the one, and she agrees to return back to the home of Yitzchak, and Yitzchak marries her. And together they have these children, Yaakov and Esav. They are twins, and they are of two very different natures and personalities. Yaakov is a Tam Yoshev Ohalim, he was a pure person who sat in the tents and studied Torah. And Esav was a Ish Tzad Sadeh, a man of the field. He loved hunting. Those were their different personalities and their different gravitations. And the Torah says that Yitzchak ve'yav Yitzchak be'esav, Yitzchak loved Esav, ki tzayid befiv, because he would hunt for him and bring him these delicious meals from the successful hunting in the field. And so that's the first question I'd like to address, is why did Yitzchak love Esav? The Midrash tells us that Esav was involved in all sorts of despicable things. He was morally degenerate, and he was involved in Gilui Arayos, sexual immorality, in Shfichas Davim, in murder, in Avodah Zorah. How could it be that Yitzchak already was now towards the end of his life and he was blind? He couldn't see. But why was he taken in by Esav, when one would expect Yitzchak, who was a great spiritual giant, would perceive the degenerate nature of Esav? That's the first question. Second question is, why did he like the food? We see that Yitzchak calls in Esav and he says, please, my son, go out to the field and hunt for me some food and prepare that food for me, which I love, kasher ahavti, the pasuk says, that I love so much. What is this? Yitzchak is a huge tzaddik. Is he, you know, so caught up with the delicious food that he's going to something that he is desiring? And the reason why he told him to do so was in order to be able to eat the meal, feel a sense of satisfaction, and then he would be able to bless Esav. So the question is, what is going on with this food over here? That's question number two. Now, question number three is, Rivka hears this. Rivka is very concerned about this, and she hears the request of Esav, of Yitzchak to Esav, to go and hunt, and that he, then he would bless him, giving the blessings. The blessings were very significant. The blessings would ensure who would carry on the spiritual legacy and heritage of the people. Who would be the next in line where they would lead the Jewish people would be the recipient of the blessings from Yitzchak. And so Rivka sees disaster impending right now, that the blessings are going to be given to the wrong son, that Yitzchak is not seeing the true nature of Esav. And that's going to be the end of the Jewish people, the end of this incredible spiritual pathway that was forged by Avraham and Sarah, and then continued by Yitzchak and Rivka. And now it had to be continued. This is the future of the world, the purpose of the world. The reason why Hashem created the world is that there would be a group of people that would cling to Hashem, bring the light of Hashem into the world, and be a light to all of humanity. That's what's going on over here. This is the destiny of all of the world. And it's going to be an absolute calamity if these blessings go to Esav and not to Yaakov. And so Rivka quickly takes matters into her own hands, and she says to Yaakov, "Va'ata bani, shma b'koli, now my son, listen to me," in a very impassioned plea to Yaakov to quickly go and prepare a meal before Esav could come back, in order that he would be the one to receive the blessing. So why she, the lashon of the pasuk, the expression is quite emphatic, and it seems to be telling us something. Va'ata bani shma b'koli. She doesn't say shma b'koli, and certainly Yaakov would listen to the request of his mother. He fulfilled the mitzvah of kivud aim. So why does she have to say shma b'koli? Va'ata bani shma b'koli. What's going on over there? And finally, sorry, two more questions. Why is it that it says that when Yaakov comes in to get the blessings, he gives the meal to Yitzchak? And actually is a goat, which is a domestic animal, because he didn't go out to the field. He wasn't a hunter. So Yitzchak doesn't even pick up that this is a goat and not a wild animal from the field, which have very different tastes, not a deer, what we would call, you know, a buck, but rather it's a goat. So he doesn't pick up the taste, and he smells the smell of Yaakov. We know that Yaakov put these goat skins on him, these ram skins on him, in order that, because Esav was hairy and he wasn't. And he says to him, Rech b'ni kareach hasadeh, the smell of my son is like the smell of the field. And that field is the field of Gan Eden. And finally it says that, so that's when Yaakov comes in. When Esav comes in, so the Torah tells us that he smelt Gehinim, because the pasuk says that Yitzchak responds and he says, V'yitzak tza'aka gedoyl omara, that Yitzchak let out a cry, a very bitter cry, when Esav came in. So what is going on over here? It's all very perplexing. It's like a very confusing story with so many different aspects that are quite difficult to understand. So let's try and build together what we call a mahalach, an approach, and hopefully that approach will answer all five of our questions. Okay, so let's go through those questions again very quickly. Why is it that Yitzhak was taken in with Esav but didn't see the true nature of Esav? Why did Yitzhak require the meal to be made in order for him to give the blessings? Why did Rivka speak to Yaakov in such a strange way? Ata b'ni shma b'koli. Seems to be very emphatic. Why did Yitzhak smell the smell of Yaakov? He said, Reach mi kareach asadeh lak gan Eden. And why did he let out this terrible cry when Esav came in after Yaakov? Those are the five questions. So let's try and see if we can answer those questions in the short time that we have together. So there's a beautiful yesod from the Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim is Rav Chaim of Volozhin, and he was the founder of the Volozhin Yeshiva, the Talmud of the great Vilna Gaon, and he's got a perush, a commentary on Pirkei Avos, which is called Ruach Chaim. And we start Pirkei Avos with the famous pasuk from Yeshaya, which teaches us Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek L'Olam Haba, that every Jew has a portion in the next world. And on that pasuk, it says he opens up by saying Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek L'Olam Haba. That's what it says in Pirkei Avos, that every Jew has a portion in the next world. The question is, why does it not say ba'olam haba, but la'olam haba? Listen to what Rav Chaim of Volozhin says on this pasuk. He says, "Hine yadua ki be'es yale al ra'ayoni ish la'asos mitzvah." Says Rav Chaim of Volozhin that at the time when a person has the idea, has the intention to do a mitzvah, nase rishoyma lamala, a certain impression is made in the higher worlds, umit oire alav or makiv mea kedusha, and at that moment a great light of holiness surrounds the person. So as soon as the person has in mind, intends to do a mitzvah, so a light surrounds that person, and he's immersed in this light. Adam betavech behu loy. So a person now is immersed in this beautiful light because he intended to do the mitzvah, and that remains with the person and assists the person in order to complete that mitzvah. And that light gives the person a certain feeling and sense that they actually are in Gan Eden at that moment, although they're in this world. But the idea and the intention to the mitzvah arouses this great light that encompasses the person, remains with the person until they do the mitzvah, and they get a sense like they're surrounded by the perfection of Gan Eden. Gan Eden. Va'kedusha milvashtoi ve'de gemar ha'mitzvah yoter mitchazek halavush umeir. And when he completes that mitzvah, so this light is strengthened and illuminates further. Ba'or mistalek acharkach legan Eden, v'zehu scharo la'atid. Says Ruach Chaim of Volozhin, the Ruach Chaim, that then when the person completes the mitzvah, that light then leaves the person and remains intact for them in Gan Eden, and that is our reward in Olam Haba. That's our reward in the next world. So it's an amazing concept. It seems like our storm is upon us already. Really an amazing concept that we're saying that a human being, when they think of doing a mitzvah, the light begins and it remains with them until they do the mitzvah, and then it remains, after they complete the mitzvah, it remains intact, and that's the schar, that's the reward we get for doing mitzvahs. And he continues, Rav Chaim Volozhin, and he says, V'chein rachmana litzlan, and the corollary is true also. So, Al Yaday Avun Mizdabek Bo Vasovia Voso Koachara. When a person wants to do an Aveira, when a person thinks of doing something that is bad, that is negative, that is contrary to the will of God, Ukaniske La'al, Ba'achar Hamaisa Mistalek Akol Gehenam, Umuvdal Miyakadusha. So, if a person thinks of doing an Aveira, so a certain Ruach Ra, which means a dark spiritual energy, surrounds the person, that remains with the person until they finish the Aveira, that then leaves the person and remains intact, waits for them until they get to the other side when we get to the next world. So the Aveira that they did, that energy that surrounded them during the Aveira, that's the Onesh. That will be the punishment that the person gets in the next world. Quite an amazing concept that the Ruach Chaim, Ruach Chaim V'loshen, shares with us. The Nefesh HaChaim comments on this, and he says an amazing thing. He says, that's why we say, Nefesh HaChaim, Shar Aleph Perek Vav, says, that's why we say, Ashik Shal Mitzvah Yisav, that's the Ashik Rishanu of the Brocha when we do a mitzvah. Because the Kiddishtanu B'mitzvah Yisecha, it says in the Torah that Hashem sanctified us with his mitzvahs. We say that in Davening as well. Ki Mi'esh She'oile Al Rayona Adam La'asos Mitzvah, when a person intends to do a mitzvah, Tekev Nase Rishonu L'mala B'mekor Shar Shal Ilyon. When a person intends to do a mitzvah, the source, the spiritual roots of that person are now infused with a light. U'mamshich Misham Al Atzmo Or Makiv. And this, what he calls a beautiful concept called the Or Makiv, a beautiful life surrounds the person. Kedusha El Yoina Tosefes Alav Hosoveves Yisro. And this holy light surrounds the person and becomes a part of the person's presence and existence. So it's a beautiful and powerful concept we see over here, which tells us about when we do a mitzvah and when we don't do a mitzvah. Stay with us. The punchline is coming. Please don't leave.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
So we're answering these five questions we asked about Parshas Toldos, and we are beginning our answer with this beautiful concept of the Ruach Chaim, who's Rav Chaim of Volozhin, and the Nefesh HaChaim, which is also written by Rav Chaim of Volozhin. So he starts explaining a little bit of the concept in Ruach Chaim, his country in Pirkei Avos, and then he elaborates on it in his Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, in which he says that when a person intends to do a mitzvah, a certain light encompasses that person, remains with us and assists us in doing the mitzvah, and then it strengthens that light and becomes very powerful. And once we've completed the mitzvah, that light remains intact for us in the next world. And that's the reward we receive for doing that mitzvah. And the opposite is true for an Aveira. When we do an Aveira, a dark energy is created and emanates from on high. And when we complete that Aveira, that energy is strengthened, that what we call a Ruach Ra, a dark negative spiritual force, is now created and is in Gan Eden, remains in Gan Eden, that dark negative spiritual force, and causes us tremendous harm when we leave this world. So with that concept in mind, let's now plug it back into this scenario of Yaakov and Esav and Yitzhak and Rivka. So we started out by saying, firstly, why is it that Yitzhak was fooled by Esav? The reason is because whenever Esav was around Yitzhak, he was fulfilling the mitzvah of Kibud Av. In other words, and we know the Midrash says that Esav's fulfillment of this particular mitzvah was outstanding, was superb. He took the honoring of his father very seriously. He wore special clothing to honor his father. And he, every time he interacted with his father, so his father picked up this energy. So that's what the Ruach Chaim says, that when we do a mitzvah, we're surrounded by this life, that by this Or Makiv. And Yitzchak, who was such a spiritual giant, was very perceptive and picked up this light of Esav when he walked into the room. And he sensed that Esav had this great spiritual light that accompanied him. But that wasn't Esav's light. That was just because he happened to be doing a mitzvah right now. And so Yitzchak didn't differentiate between the two. The light that accompanied Esav, he thought was with him all the time. He didn't make that distinction and say, well, it's only with him now because he's doing the mitzvah of Kibud Av. And it's likewise with the food. Yitzchak was not a food fundi. He was not a chef who knew all the great culinary distinctions. He couldn't even distinguish between the goat food that Yaakov brought and the wild, the deer food that he asked Esav to hunt for him. He couldn't distinguish the taste. The reason why he was moved by the food was because it was a Suda's mitzvah. Because when Esav brought him food, he was doing a mitzvah. And so Yitzchak saw the eating of that food as being part of that mitzvah of being honored by Esav. And therefore, it's a Suda's mitzvah. It had a din of a Suda's mitzvah. And that's what kept Yitzchak. That's why he wanted the food. He wanted to partake in that food in order to partake in the mitzvah and to then bless Esav. So that's what's going on with the food. A great tzaddik is not a person who's thinking of food all the time and completely immersed in delicacies and delicious food. So that was question number two. Question number three was, why is it that Rivka said to Yaakov, so she wanted to circumvent this disaster, and she wanted Yaakov to bring food to Yitzchak first and to receive the blessings. So why is it that she, when she instructs Yaakov to carry out her wishes and to be part of this plan, she says to him these words, "Va'ata bani shma b'koili," and now my son, listen to my voice, which is like quite a verbose way of saying it. She just says shma b'koili, and he would have done it, would have honored his mother, because he says, "Ata bani," this is the going to save the Jewish people, and you must do this mitzvah. So you're doing this for the mitzvah of listening to me, shma b'koili. So she, just like Esav, in serving his father, would be doing the mitzvah of kibud av. Yaakov, in serving that meal, is doing the mitzvah of kibud aim. He's fulfilling the instructions of the mother. And then Yaakov also would have this or makiv and this great light that's surrounding him. And Yitzchak would also sense that he's part of a mitzvah now that he's bringing him that food. And that's why it says when Yaakov came in and presented the food to Yitzchak, it says, Reach b'ni k'reach asadi. The pasuk says that the smell of my son is like the smell of the field. And that field, of course, says Rashi, is Gan Eden. So even though one of the commentaries in Mishnah says that the smell of goat skin, so Yaakov put goat skins on himself, so because Esav was very hairy, didn't want Yitzhak to suspect that it was not Esav. And goat skins have a terrible smell. They don't have a good smell. Yet Yitzchak says that this smells like an Eden, because he is picking up that light, that or hamakiv, that glow that surrounds a person when they do a mitzvah. And he sensed that when Yaakov came in. And he got a sense and a feeling of Gan Eden, because Yaakov was also fulfilling the mitzvah of kivud aim. And so that's why Yitzchak now is enthusiastic and understands that a mitzvah is being done. And that puts him into the right mindset, into the right framework in order to give the blessings that he's supposed to. So the question then is, why is it when Esav came in that Yitzchak didn't sense the same light? Because Esav would also have been doing the mitzvah of kibud av. So listen to this unbelievable midrash. It's really an amazing midrash, which tells us why it wasn't the same with Esav. So the Midrash says in Bereshis Rabbah, Samach Zayin, base, it says, Amar Rabbi Shur ben Levi, Kol Osa Yom, Haya Esav Tzad Tzvaim, Gukoiftan, Umalach Ba Umatiran, that all of that day, Esav, who was a superb hunter, he would trap animals and he would tie them up. And then a malach would come and release those animals. V'oifos u'mesachachan, u'malach ba d'mafrichan. And he would catch birds, and the malach would come and free the birds. K'dei sheyavo Yaakov shu yakaru shel oilam, v'yitol es habrachos shemi'ika oilam charutzos loy. In order that Yaakov would receive the brachas and Esav would receive the brachas. So what happened is that Esav was delayed, and whatever he caught, he tied up in order to bring back and prepare. The malach would free the animal, would free the bird, and so Esav was very frustrated that he was not able to find anything to prepare for his father. And says Targum Yonasim ben Uzel, he says
that after these frustrations, v'ashkach kalva chada v'katle. So the all he could successfully find was a dog. Esav found a dog, he killed the dog, and that's what he prepared for his father. So instead of bringing the wild animal, which is kosher, all the wild animals got away, and he had to bring a dog. And there's a modern-day sefer called Rafduni v'Tapchuni. He says the following, that he came to feed his father a dog, as Rabbi Yonasan Ozeel tells us. Lo haya zeh shum mitzvah. That's not a mitzvah. For other Rabbi Nitoisef or Ad Gehenim. That was an Aveira. So he's giving his father Nevelis for Trefus. He wasn't giving him kosher food. And so instead of it being a mitzvah, it was a tremendous Aveira. And that's why Yitzhak reacted in the way he did. The Yitzhak tsa'aka gedoyla umara ad mo'od. Yitzhak let out this terrible cry, because once Esav wasn't surrounded by the light of the glow of a mitzvah, but rather he was surrounded by the dark spiritual energy, the tumah of an Aveira, and suddenly Yitzhak got insight into the full character and nature of Esav and realized that he was mistaken all along, and that the brachas had to go to Yaakov as they did and not to Esav. So it's such a beautiful idea that we hear that the Nefesh Chaim teaches us, and with that idea we're able to answer all of our questions. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
So we've been discussing the fascinating episode in this week's Parsha, Parsha Toldos, with Yaakov and Esav and Yitzhak and Rivka, and we answered up our five questions. We asked, why was it that Yitzhak didn't see through the nature of Esav and understand how rotten Esav really was? And we said, because of this great principle from the Nefesh HaChaim, the Ruach HaChaim, that a person who does a mitzvah, there's a light that glows from their person. Every time Yitzhak interacted with Esav, he was fulfilling the mitzvah of Kivud Av, and therefore he didn't. That glow actually disguised the true nature of Esav. And that's why the food that he wanted Esav to prepare, it was whenever Esav brought him food, it had this certain glow to it, the certain spiritual power, because it was fulfilling the mitzvah of Kivud Av. So he wanted that food to give him the boost in order to give the brachas in the right way. And Rivka then goes to Yaakov and implores Yaakov, and it's a very strong expression that she uses in order that Yaakov also understands that he's doing the mitzvah of fulfilling the will of his mother, of Kivud Aim. And therefore, he too will glow with the light of that mitzvah. And that's why when Yaakov comes in, it says, Reach b'nika reach hasadeh, he smelled, even though he was wearing these goat hairs, which smell terrible, but Yitzhak perceived the spiritual energy with which Yaakov entered and which surrounded Yaakov because he was fulfilling the mitzvah of Kivud Aim. And Esav didn't have that glow anymore because the malach prevented him from catching and bringing wild animals that are kosher or wild birds that are kosher, but rather he ended up only with a dog, which is a treif animal. And since it's a treif animal that he's feeding his father, so it was an avera, not a mitzvah. And therefore, Yitzhak now, for the first time, sees the true nature of Esav, and he lets out this cry, Yitzhak tza'aka gedoylo umara admo'o, this terrible cry, because for the first time, the penny now drops, and he sees the true nature of Esav, and he understands that he is being misled. The brachas had to go to Yaakov, which they did, but the shock that Yitzhak receives by seeing Esav's true nature is expressed very dramatically by this pasuk in the Torah. So with that beautiful yosod, we learn of the understanding of what was going on. And it's a great musa from Rav Chaim of Volozhin that every time we do a mitzvah, there's a great light that we bring into this world, and that light remains for us in the next world. And every time we do a veira, there's a darkness and a tumah we bring into this world. That's a very beautiful concept and idea. This idea I actually heard from Rabbi Gladstein, who was visiting for the Shabbos project, and it's such a beautiful idea that he shares with this powerful principle from Chaim of Volozhin, from the Ruach Chaim. Thank you so much for listening. and have a wonderful day.